No, but we do record this as backup audio just in case.
Yeah, it saved
So,
us a few times when there's something went wrong with the guest audio, and then I pulled it
okay.
from the Zoom, so you record the Zoom audio.
Hello, my friends.
Thank you for joining us for the PebCAC podcast, a weekly information security show featuring some all-around good people. It is week 18 of 2024. I'm Chris Lloyd, and I've seen my fair share of Cybertrucks on the road by where I live. With me, I have my co-host, the Cloud God, who can't wait to get one of his three Cybertrucks.
You know, you're outing me on my buying obsession, but the only reason why I have three for everyone listening is the night that they did the announcement, I was trying to make my reservation, and the website kept crapping out. And so I woke up the next morning with three reservations. So apparently they were going through, even though the response or the confirmation wasn't there. So that's all right. But I don't even know what I'm going to do with it. I don't know that I feel like I'm going to actually drive a Cybertruck. And I've only seen one in person and it was behind me because, you know, I like to go so fast. So there's that.
Well, you can graciously give me one of your reservations since I'm eagerly waiting for mine.
Bro, I don't understand how I don't have one already. Like, not that I would do foundation anyways, because I'm not going to pay another 20 grand just to get it right away. But, I mean, it was like that night, as soon as orders opened up, I placed it. And I guess I'm not the first 4,000 people yet.
So. No, I guess not. And we do not have Glenn this week. He's dealing with some things, so we hope to have him back soon. This week's guest is Suna Turan. Suna is our second guest from Germany, a career and sales coach, and also hosts the Revenue Circus podcast. Welcome, Suna. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Chris. Hi, Brian. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on your show today, on your podcast. Really, really excited and looking forward to it. Yeah, we know each other from Zscaler. I've spent the past 4 years at Zscaler. But on the other side of the pond in Germany, this is where I'm from. And my name is Turkish, and I'm really impressed by how you pronounced my name correctly here. So kudos to you. So it's Suna, like sooner or later. It's one of my hashtags on LinkedIn too. And we can later talk about some, yeah, nice autocorrect solutions of my name, of how I'm sometimes called when I send an email and, you know, forget to check the autocorrect. But other than that, really, really happy to be on this show today with you.
We're stoked to have you. When I first saw your podcast, the Revenue Circus, it reminded me of Nitro Circus. Have you ever heard of that?
No, but it does sound like a great circus. Tell me more.
Basically, it's just a bunch of, like, you know, super, you know, adrenaline filled dudes that like to drive motorcycles and jump them through fire and do other crazy things. So
Travis Pastrana. I was like, man,
yeah, I think that's his name. Yeah. Pretty interesting stuff. I've never seen them in person, but I saw them back in the day on MTV. So when I listen to your podcast, there better be fire in circles. If not, I'm tuning right out. Just kidding.
There's one woman on the Nitro Circus, Jolene, I think. It's not just a bunch of dudes.
I was waiting for you to go into character of Dolly Parton. Jolene, Jolene. Suna, do you even know that song?
Of course, everybody knows, and it's super annoying.
Wow. Well, my voice or the song? Because
the song, your voice is okay. Wonderful.
Well, thank you. I've never heard that in my entire life, so we'll take it.
There's no need for flattery on the podcast. We already have you on as a guest.
We can already tell you'll be back again before we know it.
Trying to make you sing even more, you know. It's one of my hobbies, so I just try to find more reasons to make the two of you sing now.
Oh, geez. Sure.
Combined, we have decades of information security experience, and here not just to educate, but to entertain. We've got four awesome stories for you this week, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. This week, we're going to talk about a gaping vulnerability in a VPN firewall appliance, an unlikely hero in the fight against CSAM. For our third topic, TikTok gets banned, and close with the juices loose talk. For our first topic, Brian harassed me enough last week to add this topic of the show, so here goes. Researchers at Velocity found a CVSS 10 out of 10 vulnerability on the Global Protect VPN service that's run on many Palo Alto Networks firewalls. That's as far as I'm taking this one. So, Brian, why don't you take it from here?
All right. So, the reason why I'm so passionate about this one is, like, historically, when a network security device is kind of breached, right, in a negative way, it's almost always like on the management console. So usually you think about a device and you have its public interface, the internal, then you have a management interface where it's really, really locked down. Not this one, right? Like, they were like, hey, let's just do a really bad idea and put a almost purposeful backdoor into the front door of our network security appliance, the literal VPN gateway, right? And if you think about, you know, what is a VPN? A VPN is a device that's sitting out on the internet edge that is waiting for anything and everyone to come in and talk to it. And then it also has hands and eyes into pretty much every aspect of your network, which is terrifying. So this one, the exploit, not only doesn't require zero authentication, but it's just a remote code execution. So I have the ability to parse something in there and do all kinds of bad things. So that saying that I'm sure we've all heard, if it's reachable, it's breachable, now applies to VPN, right? Which is just insane. I think it's a terrible whatever. So as you dive into this, you know, one of the mitigations around this thing was like, oh, just turn off telemetry. Some feature basically needs to be enabled for it to respond back, and that will fix the problem. And I was following a Reddit post where some dude was on there. He's like, yeah, he's like, I was on with tax support from Palo Alto, and she said that turning off telemetry probably doesn't fix the problem. And one of the first comments was very dismissive, right? He was like, yeah, man, she's stupid. She doesn't know what he's talking about. And I'm just like, man, like, way to go, man. Like, this bad advice, and you're putting down a woman on top of it. Like, you know, just two for two, just, you know, doubling down on really bad ideas here. And so then a couple days later, I think it was confirmed that even if you turn off telemetry, it didn't fix the problem. So
that is correct.
Yeah. And so then, you know, we fast forward a little bit more. You know, customers are doing one of two things. Either we patch it, or we look for an alternative way, right? And I've had the pleasure of talking to a lot of customers that are like, they're kind of fed up. And what I've heard from them is that, like, that there's essentially like tax support from Palo Alto is like overwhelmed. And they have like a war room going on, because like, if you're breached, right? Like, if someone comes in, that's just part one of the playbook. You really don't understand who the adversary is and what else they're doing, right? It's not really that all that predictable. So trying to figure out what that is going on there is like a WTF moment. Like, it is super painful. Like, trying to figure out where do they go? What else do they do? In some cases, it takes hours or days, maybe even weeks, right, to figure out exactly what's going on. And if you think about it from an adversary, once you're in a network, once you've breached it, right, especially something's high visibility as this, it will get patched at some point in time. So what do you got? What else do you do? Well, number two is you have to establish multiple beachheads, because if they close that front door, you need to figure out a different way to get in, right? And then you're going to start, the persistence. Then you have to, establish those multiple beachheads. Then you want to start to move laterally throughout the network. And the scariest thing about this is you're on a VPN appliance that has arms in everything. So moving laterally is this peace out, bro. Like, I've been waiting for this moment all my life. Maybe start doing some Kerber roasting, right? Trying to steal identity, because if you own identity, you know, the game is over. We've seen that everywhere. Find some data, you exfil that data, and then you extort the customer. So I've heard, and I can't confirm, but I think people are starting to go down the route of the, I think it was Barracuda method, which is, how about we just throw it away and just buy a whole new one? Because we don't know how badly this box has been compromised. So when you decided to skip this topic last week, this is why. I'm like, this is terrible. Like, this is insane. I can't believe that this is something that's even going on in the world. So that's my two cents. I'll let you guys comment on it.
Well, when I read it, I said, another VPN breach, another day, another problem. It's like, all right, next, what's more interesting? That's the reason I skipped, because literally every week you see other vendors getting breached. There's one about, you know, Cisco ASA 0 days. That's this week. Do you want to talk about that next week, Brian? Are you going to harass me to talk about ASA firewalls next week? So it's just...
Well, I can't tell you the last time I talked to anybody that has an ASA firewall. That's why. I think Paul Alt has got like an install base of like 100,000 people.
100,000, like,
yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, it's.
Yeah. I think the article I linked through in the show notes, 22,500 Palo Alto firewalls still vulnerable. So some person went out there on Shodan, did a scan and says, yeah, there's at least 22,000 firewalls out there that are still running vulnerable versions of the PAN-OS.
22,000 front doors, wide open. It's like locking a screen door. So how soon, sooner or later, you're going to call people up and try to run some CrowdStrike on these VPN appliances, aren't you?
Well, you know, the thing is, of course, there are a variety of solutions out there, and I'm more than happy. I've spent the last 4 years at Zscaler. I think everybody who has been working for Zscaler knows the benefits it brings to the customer. And so with CrowdStrike, it's very, very similar. It's a focus on the endpoint. As long as people are open towards change, and that's a little difficult at times in Germany, change is something that people aren't eager necessarily from the onset to embark on. You just really need to put a lot of energy into it. But I'm confident that, any solutions which really belong to the past also remain in the past.
So is that a cultural thing? Because I look at the US and how people jump from job to job, and all that good stuff. And I was in Australia, and every customer I visited was like really, really long-term tenured employees. They've been there for 15, 20 years. And the only time they would consider change is if they brought in leadership, like a CISO or a CTO that was like, no, I'm here to ruffle feathers and make a big change. Is that how it is over there? Like, what? Why is Germany so opposed to change?
It's a good question. I'm asking this myself too. It's very, very difficult to understand why this is the case. I believe you're absolutely right. We need normally the right type of leadership in these customer accounts, in these big enterprises, which, you know, realize that the future is kind of the cloud, right? And then scalable solutions, and not sticking to things which, you know, used to be right. Nobody's saying they weren't. They used to be good solutions out there, but times have changed. And when times change, you know, people use new phones now. They don't use the old phones. And so it's the same with any type of technology for the business. You don't use, you know, what used to be good. You use what currently serves your new needs in the business. And that means you have to let go. And this letting go part, I think, is something that requires a lot of courage. And Germans aren't necessarily known for being super courageous, but I've seen great leaders here and great, great, great companies taking all the courage they have and doing like what it needs to be a great leader, meaning doing the change management, taking people with them, explaining the why behind things, and really making sure that change can happen on a technological side, and therefore also enable the business side of things going towards, yeah, success.
Right on. Yeah, I always tell customers, like, and this only works in the US, right? Like, not all change is bad. If it wasn't for change, right, you'd still be ruled by the king of England, right?
By
like
the crown.
So that was one that kind of worked out. Yeah, that one worked out well for us. Although I think, I don't know what the tax rate is over there anymore, but I know it's probably close to what we're doing already. So I guess those stars aligned eventually, right?
So just for the record, Brian was the one that endlessly harassed me to throw this story into the show, and now he pivoted to German culture.
Know your audience, brother, or your guest a little bit. Jeez, rude.
So back to the Palo Alto gaping hole that Brian likes to likes to talk about so much. I one correction. So it wasn't a remote code execution vulnerability. It was a command injection vulnerability that could lead to remote code execution. So it's
Correct.
still the year 2024. Supposed cutting edge security appliances still vulnerable to things like command injection. And if I remember correctly, it was trivial too. Like you said, it's not even on the management interface. It was, I think you can send a
You do
GET
curl.
request. Yeah, it was a curl or a GET request, or you display a malcrafted cookie, and it ended up being something like path traversal that you would submit it to the firewall appliance and say you could dot dot slash your way to all the way to root and get root access to the device. But something as old as time, doing the dot dot slash to go to path traversal to inject commands, and that's all it took to completely own the box. And once you own the box, then you can own the network.
Well, since we're being a stickler for corrections all of a sudden here, Chris, curl is a tool to use a GET. So it's not a curl or a GET. You can, never mind. I won't even say it because you have to blur it out anyways. So don't be a jerk.
Yeah, just like the Ivanti bug, the time to patch was anywhere between 2 and 6 days after Palo Alto was notified by Velocity, and it was under active exploitation during that entire time. I know that Microsoft themselves, they had 100 Palo Alto firewalls that were, I guess, attempted to be exploited. I wonder if CISA had any of these firewalls. They got hit hard with the Ivanti bug. I don't know if they got hit hard with this one. Only time will tell. And back to your point of after you've been breached and the attacker has multiple beachheads and they establish persistence, it's the eviction problem that we always talk about. Just because you patch the box, you threw the old one in a shredder, you have a new one. How do you know for sure that the attackers are out? You don't. It's really, really hard to evict people once they're in.
It's like squatters in California, right? It's going
They
to be a
check
challenge.
in, they never check out.
But again, it's probably nation state type of attack. Who knows? My favorite thing was, I think it was deleted, but someone on the subreddit for Palo Alto was like, "I don't have to worry about this, right? I do multi-factor authentication." I was like, "Oh God, yeah." I just went right
Right.
back to him. Yeah, man, you're cool.
Right.
Don't worry about it. Just. You're good. You're good. You obviously read the CVE. You understand exactly what's going on right here. Have a great time.
No need to
We will
call in
not be
Mandy
hiring
yet.
you.
That's where the whole zero trust thing comes in. Even if you get breached, even if somebody gets valid credentials into your organization, how far can they go? Can they see everything? Do they have network level access? Do they have only access to what they need?
Mandy, it's just like this can be a very profitable quarter for us guys.
It's like that meme with the guy behind the tree, like looking happy and rubbing his hands together. It's
Yeah.
like,
Did
get
you ever?
ready to
I know
raise that
exactly.
Q4 forecast, boys.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the origins of that
No,
meme?
the guy looks like Bunk from The Wire, though. I don't know if it's him or not.
No, I guess he was just out like doing like a family photo shoot, and so then he did some like candid things just to be fun, and that was one of them that went viral.
Nice.
So never do photo shoots with your family if you don't want to end up like that, right? If you don't want to be a meme afterwards.
I think it'd be an honor to be a meme. Like there's Scumbag Steve and Bad Luck Brian, and this is a bunch of them. The baby that's like cheering. Like I think they do things on Reddit like later on, like where are they now? And it's interesting to see if they've embraced
It was this one.
that.
And I don't even think he's wearing a shirt underneath that.
No,
Like,
he's not. He's just wearing a yellow sport coat and the
oh
tag still
man.
on the sleeve.
Kind of built like a bag of mashed potatoes. That ring is not coming off, guys. Look at that thing. That is there to stay forever. That is pinching off the circulation. I shouldn't say
Is a good
negative
shot.
things.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so how, I guess for question for Asuna, how would EDR or any of the other solutions potentially discover this? Is it once somebody breaches the environment and they do something suspicious on the network, it sends telemetry back to Falcon and say something weird's going on here?
Yeah, of course. Falcon sees everything. I'm not able to pitch as much as I want to yet. But what I can tell you is there are good reasons why CrowdStrike as a company out there has been performing so greatly over the past years now. There are good reasons for why, you know, companies think, yeah, we should invest into CrowdStrike as a solution in order to be more secure, specifically on the endpoint. Nice part about it is it's a platform. So similar to Zscaler, variety of topics that are covered on the platform and therefore also offer operational efficiency, consolidation, and very, very similar to Zscaler, platforms with a lot of benefit behind it win nowadays. So, and then if you're able to actually understand, you know, who is attacking you, why, where this is coming from, having an increasing and really crazy amount of knowledge for threat intelligence means that, you know, you can ensure you're on the right path with solutions like Zscaler and CrowdStrike.
Agreed. I think this one is a little bit different than, say, the Ivanti or the Fortinet bugs that we've seen, or the Cisco bugs, especially in the past. And time will tell if my thesis is right or wrong, but Palo Alto is a security vendor, so they have this VPN component of it, but they also have a threat prevention piece of it too. And I think one of the mitigations, Palo Alto said, turn on this specific threat ID, and then that can tell if your firewall got popped or not, and if you have vulnerable devices in your environment. But to see whether or not, since they claim to be a security company, if even though they got breached through these appliances, if the security features on their firewalls was able to stop anything, stop potential lateral east-west movement with their firewalls. And I think some of the reports that come out for the breaches that we'll see in the next few months might say whether or not that was the case. But I know for sure, like Ivanti, we're seeing people getting breached left and right because of it.
The good part about CrowdStrike is we don't only have the motto of we stop breaches, but we actually really do. So that's good about CrowdStrike, to be honest. So yeah, it's super cool being on this side and talking to you as former colleagues here. I mean, we are anyways a joint good solution out there. So yeah.
I agree with you. I recorded a video on the partnership just the other day. It's in post edit right now. Hey, but I will say, out of the three companies that we're talking about right now, well, at least, you know, Palo Alto, CrowdStrike, and Zscaler, only one of the companies has been featured on a Super Bowl commercial. So there's that. Who's the real scared company?
Oh, that was awful. All right, the last thing I'll say about this, the good thing about having a gaping hole in the security product is that we get to throw lots of shade at our friend Todd over there, which is hilarious to see in our group chats.
Poor Todd. We love you, though. He'll never hear this conversation because he's probably too busy patching stuff for customers.
It's true.
I have no idea if that's true. Anyways.
All right. For our second topic in this story, where you can't really be mad at the bad guys here, like really, who are the bad guys? Well, a malware developing is targeting child exploiters into a honey trap in order to extort them. The malware developer created a fake website that purports to host child sex abuse material, or CSAM, and there are various tiers of access. The fake website gives these child predators an option to pay monthly, pay yearly, or there's a free option if you download and install their special VPN software to access the website anonymously and securely. I think you can see where this is going. After the predator downloads and installs the quote free VPN software, the executable runs a PowerShell script that changes the computer's background to display a message that the VPN is fake software. Surprise, surprise. And unless they send $500 worth of Bitcoin to a specified address, the malware developer will publish the predator's information and contact their friends and family. the Mauer author even named the script Pedo Ransom. At the time of recording, the Bitcoin address has only collected $84. Nice try, but again, you can't be too mad at the attempted extortion.
So if I'm Zscaler or CrowdStrike or Microsoft or VirusTotal, I'm going to be like, hey guys, this is benign. We're not going to worry about it. We'll just let this one go through.
We'll let this go through this time.
Yeah, this is one of those good ones. And in fact, if I was actually the person that created this, you know, free VPN software, I think not only would I take their money, I would still out them. I'd just be like, nope, thanks for your $500. You're going to prison, buddy. Have a good old time.
Yeah.
I think it's great, but I would love to see this more efficiently, to be honest. I think we need this. We need more people actually doing something against this whole, you know, pedo. You call it pedo ransom here as a script, which is nice, but it could be even in more than that. There's so much going on online that you rather wouldn't like to see. So let's hope that we can use these types of viruses, attacks, hackers for the good in the future. I really, really like this, though, that you're sharing this here. Really, really, really cool. Thank you.
I think the guy,
what I don't,
the person should have taken a step further, like take the open source Lockbit code and then just use it to ransom the person's computer and then just throw away the key. Like that would not be a bad thing if their computer died.
Can you imagine if it was like a shared computer at your house?
You got the pedo ransom on it.
Yeah, you're just like, oh, man, I'm going to have to blame one of the kids. But here's what I don't understand. If it's $500 to get out of, you know, this pedo jail, then was someone just making payments? They're like, listen, I don't got enough money. I don't got the full $500, but I got $84.
$10 a month for the next 50 months.
Or do you think they negotiated with them? Like, dude, I don't got that kind of money.
Yeah,
I'm obviously a pervert. Best I can do is $84.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
Again, they're doing the Lord's work. I'm down for this. And as soon as said, there's a lot of terrible stuff that's out there. If we want to call this pedo ransomware, I think it's more like pedo cleansing. Right, I don't know what else to say about this. This is a good thing,
Brian.
Right?
I got a lot of heat by using that word.
Did you really?
I really hope that they only got $84 because, you know, they changed. They really made sure that they got the addresses and the names of these people and sent them over to the right people to take care of them. If you get what I mean. So I hope that, you know, Any dollar that's on that account is actually not coming from somebody who spent their money in order to get free, but that they were actually found. So, you know, continue the fight.
Yeah, maybe it was a test transaction. They wanted to make sure they got it before they sent the full amount. But $84, yeah, no, not, you think, not though, a huge that, like, money-making man.
People like this would be like really paranoid of free stuff, but maybe they just really want that kind of material. I have no idea. But what we really need is, I guarantee you, there's people that are probably in countries where you probably don't get in as much trouble with this stuff, I would assume. Because don't they normally like host some of these things like in the Philippines or in APAC somewhere?
Yeah, probably countries that don't enforce the law or law enforcement can be easily persuaded with money. Maybe those kinds of countries.
Maybe that's what I'll do when I retire. This would be the pedo goon squad. Let's go around beating up people in foreign countries for doing bad crap.
Although, there was a story, so part of the Traces in the Dark story by Andy Greenberg, and on the Darknet Diaries podcast, there's a website, Welcome to Video. It's down now, so you don't have any fear of encountering that material. But the website was called Welcome to Video, and essentially it was, a long story short, the guy hosting it was in South Korea. It was literally a desktop computer that had like 50 hard drives attached to it and just like had all this CSAM material on it. And then there was some crazy loophole in South Korean law, since this guy like never actually did anything, or he wasn't the actual pedophile. Like, he got off really, really light and just set off like a firestorm in South Korea that says we need to reform these laws. This guy did a lot of bad in the world and he is not getting justice, his due justice. So South Korea, unsuspectingly or surprisingly, is a supposed safe haven if you store this kind of material there.
Let's bomb it. I'm just kidding. There's a lot of good people there, though, too. I don't know. Complex problems. This is a great start. I think any security company should just look the other way.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll get in trouble for saying that, but whatever.
Unpopular opinion, but popular with some.
Let's say we're having an internal meeting at Zscaler. I'm like, yeah, we should just let this, you know, no signatures for this one. Let's just let it go through. If anyone was like, no, we got to block it. Like, can I see the contents of your hard drive, please? I'm like, that is a giant red flag. I don't know.
Hand over your laptop right now.
Why are you on this side of the fence when we're all over here on this side of the fence? I don't get it.
Yeah, I've always wondered, because we're a security company and we block malware, but there are some pieces of malware I'm thinking of, like Stuxnet, that are used by our intelligence agencies. So I wonder, and I don't know the answer to this. I honestly don't. I wonder if we ever get letters from intelligence agencies that says, hey, we have this targeted operation for this particular individual using this particular strain of malware. You know, don't alert them to it. Like, I know Facebook does that. Like, if somebody gets phished through Facebook, the intelligence community can send a letter to Facebook that says, don't flag this. Don't block it. We're conducting an operation here. I wonder if security vendors ever get that.
Well, you know, it would be fun, though, is go to, like an internal thing, like maybe like a Confluence page, and sort by date and search for the word telemetry in an HTTP post to see, was there anything already there before this actually came out? That'd be interesting. You'd be like, I guess so. Like maybe the US was exploiting it. Who knows?
That or something like Pegasus. Like Pegasus gets a lot of heat in the news for being used against dissidents and journalists and the wrong kind of people, but Pegasus is a legitimate spy tool to stop terrorism. I wonder if we've ever gotten a request that says we're targeting this terrorist with Pegasus. This user might be a Zscaler user. Who knows? You know, we officially sanctioned all the bad countries, but maybe they haven't installed, and maybe you let this one through for this particular user.
Slippery slope. What can I say?
Yeah. We'll never know. All right, for our third topic, it is now officially law. ByteDance must divest TikTok or face a ban here in the U.S. So ByteDance said on their own media platform that they are not exploring a sale right now. All those rumors are untrue, and they will be fighting this ban in court. Really, no surprise there. ByteDance has about 9 months to comply or face a potential ban here in the U.S. I'm sure it'll get challenged in court and the date will get pushed out. And the bill to ban TikTok here was tied to aid to Ukraine, so it was under a lot of pressure to get passed and signed into law. But this one has been proposed for a long time. You know, the former administration really pushed it. That was almost 4 years ago. There's been lots of hearings on Capitol Hill saying that TikTok is, I think somebody called it TikTok as digital fentanyl. That they said it's bad stuff on there. They're trying to sway people and change people's opinions and push certain narratives. And they're just really afraid. This is kind of like the boogeyman argument that one day China will use this information and sell it to the, or provide it to the CCP, and it'll be used to spy on Americans. So they feel that it'll be safer if they divest from China and they'll be owned by a U.S. company.
I think the funniest part of this entire thing is, I, as you said, the previous administration wanted to ban TikTok, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now that Biden put this into place, what are the Trumpers doing right now? This is an invasion of freedom of speech. I was like, you guys, if Trump had signed this, you would have been 100% on board and be like, yeah, F TikTok and their stupid dances, right? But just because the other guy you don't like decided that he wants to block it, right? Everyone's throwing it up in arms. But in the same breath, right? They're not wrong, right? It is kind of an impediment on freedom of speech. And we are kind of acting like China by doing that, which I don't know. Like, I think it should be, I don't like TikTok at all. And so I just block it at my house, right? And I think I should have the freedom of either permitting it or denying it. I don't want government telling me what can and cannot be enabled in my house. So I am a little bit of a freedom of speech absolutist, right?
It's a parents'
So
rights
I,
issue.
yeah. So I'm of the, I don't like this. As much as I don't like TikTok and I think it's stupid, I don't think that the government needs to get in between it and quill the fox here.
I don't want to out Suna here, but I will say that she is younger than Brian and I, and she is probably more of the TikTok generation than I grew up in the Facebook generation because I joined Facebook when it was only universities and I was in university at the time. So I would consider myself the Facebook generation, but based on what I believe Suna's age to be, she is probably in the TikTok generation. So I'd like to get her thoughts on this one.
I'm in the Instagram generation.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair too. Yeah.
Chris is
No,
hoping that
I'm
you're going to
also
do the renegade for us right now.
No, listen. There were some rumors that, TikTok was spying into your, I don't know, phone and could hear you and see you and whatever. So that was the time when I was like, okay, I rather deinstall the app. So to be honest, I've never really, really used it. It might come with me being in the security side of things here,
Yep.
from a tech sphere and not maybe age related. I do see though there are a lot of startups, young companies, entrepreneurs using TikTok. So after all, it's a vehicle for them to make money, and so is Instagram. So is for some Facebook. Whereas Facebook is kind of slowly dying, I think. Not because it's not something that people like to use. It's just they're just it's a different type of communication that has kind of taken over, and it's the shorter form of videos and photos and very quick likes and less text and so on. So TikTok, if it let's say if it remains a really powerful tool for people to make money, you got to think about how to deal with it, right? Because at the end of the day, it's also a restriction of a means to kind of fuel the economy out there. And in these days, with inflation and so on and so forth, what do you want to do? Do you want to ban it completely? Or do you want to provide an alternative? Or what? I mean, it's a very, very difficult discussion, I think.
It is, and
And
I see the argument of excuse me. It's a really difficult argument, and I see the a point of view that says I make a living off this. There are people, and it really, really upsets me when somebody says I'm an influencer. I'm like, okay, so you're famous for being famous. You do nothing. You contribute nothing to society, but you're still somehow able to make a living. So I
your
abhor
marginalized personality. Yeah.
that role. And to think that universities are offering courses now on how to be an influencer, like, oh, okay, this is how the country ends up going down the toilet, is things like this. So you have underwater basket weaving, you have influencer courses in universities now.
Reality, it's the way it is. I
It
mean,
is, and you can call me an old fogey and say I'm not changing with the times, but it's like, learn to code, pick up a pickaxe and go mine coal. Like, we
go
fixed the
sell
black lung
CrowdStrike.
problem.
Yeah.
See, I'm not against influencers. I'm actually admiring the fact that people who probably weren't able to make money before, like a lot of I don't know, parents who have to stay at home maybe, are able to kind of make a living through these channels.
Learn to
There
code.
is some
Learn to
learn to
code.
code, learn to code. I know, I get it. But maybe not everybody's into coding, some people are happier to kind of, I don't know, take videos of their daily dramas, chaos, whatever.
Yeah, and that's fair. Like, I wholeheartedly support entrepreneurs. So if you want to, take your clothes off and get people to pay you for it, more power to you, or film your kids or do home improvement videos. Yeah, like, if you're helping people, I can't be too mad at that. But I just hate that term, influencer.
I mean, technically, we're influencers because we're on a podcast, right? I mean, yeah.
But we have
We're
day
just not
jobs, Brian.
monetized. Yeah. Because you
It's
don't
our
know how to
side gig.
promote. Yeah. Well, what's in, all right. So I don't know that we can say that Facebook is dying. Well, at least not Meta, right? Because they got almost 4 billion people using their stuff. But I was astounded to see that TikTok's got a billion. That's insane. But out of
Because they
that
have
billion, how many
China.
do you.
Like, we don't have, none of the US companies can get access to China. If you have access to China, that's, potentially 1.3 billion customers there.
Well, in that case, that's a miss on their part. But going back to monetization and getting paid and being an influencer, of the billion, how many people there actually make enough to live off of? I bet you it's got to be a really, really small fraction.
0.1%, I would say. It's
Which
really, really small.
is 1,000 people?
Why are you asking the Asian guy
10,000?
to do math, Brian?
You're Asian? Thought you're Mexican, dude. This is crazy.
Diving into a little bit deeper into the bill. So the bill passed, and everybody called it the TikTok ban because they wrote the language in that TikTok is the only one that's really affected by this bill. But it's if you dive in a little bit deeper, like some people think that this could be, a Patriot Act 2.0 because there's something called threat inflation. So they're saying that, oh yeah, China's gonna sell your data. They're gonna try to swing our elections, and we're potentially giving the government, we actually did, we gave the government new powers that could potentially be abused because the letter of the law doesn't say by name, it doesn't say we're gonna ban TikTok. It says we're gonna ban, quote, foreign adversary controlled applications. And that includes China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. And they left it very vague and open-ended on what a controlled application is by one of these countries, like China or Russia. If Elon Musk has factories in China, he has lots of business in China. Could the government then make the argument that says Elon Musk is controlled by a foreign adversary because he has interest in China, and then ban X here in the U.S.? That leaves it a little bit open. So I think it was a little bit vague in how they did it. And I think that's the part we're gonna have to keep an eye on to see if they potentially start abusing this law to ban things they don't like X now.
And how much money are we still funding to other countries in that bill as well? Like, wasn't it tied to something else?
Yeah, I think it was 80 billion to Ukraine, 20 billion to Israel, and probably 500,000 to Egypt for gender studies or something.
So I know I'm probably gonna get canceled for asking this question, but Suna, like, and if you're uncomfortable with it, you don't have to answer. But I'm just curious, like, what from your perspective, you got the Ukraine and Russia and Israel and Iran and all that stuff that's going on. What is your viewpoint on the US's involvement? Are you like, hell yeah, it's stupid, you don't care? I'm kind of curious what from your, from somebody that's living in Germany, what is your perspective on it?
I don't know how to answer this, to be honest.
Okay. If it's an uncomfortable thing, then you don't have to. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, but
What matters to me is peace, and what matters to me is I wish people out there, we've come a long way. Look, we are not the humans we used to be, but I'm not sure we're getting smarter. I have to admit,
well, TikTok is making us dumber, so you're right.
it's true. They said having the internet, having the world's information at your fingertips has made people dumber.
I think it's how we choose to be comfortable with where we are in our societies, and then you can't really, what's missing is people maybe realizing, hey, we don't have to do X, Y, Z. We don't have to, I don't know, negate that there is something going on in the world out there with the climate. Okay, whether you want to call it climate change or not, doesn't matter. But there's something going on. Okay. And maybe, I mean, this is just an example. There's a lot of people who could benefit from opening their minds and eyes and I believe there's a lot that needs yet to be done. And then with artificial intelligence, I read this this meme once saying, I mean, it's great that we are, investing into artificial intelligence, but maybe we should, invest also into real intelligence. And I mean, it's a bit, it's a negative view a little on people, and there are a lot of intelligent people out there, and it remains on everybody themselves to define and decide what is intelligence. But I wish we had more of, I don't know, leaning towards each other as humans and coming together and thinking about how shall our future look like. And how can we actually make it nice and livable all together on this planet as long as this planet still exists and we are on it? I don't know. It's a very, very non-security tech related thought I have here, but it's something that that I wanted to just share with you because I think it is important to anybody out there, and with all the wars going on, it's something we shouldn't forget. We are all humans.
We definitely are all humans, and already this is why you're a great guest, right? This is the kind of perspective and thoughts that we need to have coming from other people than me, Chris and Glenn, to be honest with you. So I appreciate your transparency on that and thoughtful response. And when you said we need to invest in intelligence, I know the CIA was like, "Hell yeah, we do." And I was like, "That's not what she meant, guys.
Not
It's not what she meant.
that
She's
kind of
like regular,
intelligence.
yeah." Anyways.
All right, we're running tight on time, so I'm just going to jump right to topic four for our
Okay.
last topic, and it will be a rotating topic every week. This week, we're going to talk about our good friend of the show, O.J. Simpson. So this was a completely missed opportunity for last week's episode because he recently passed away, but I believe we recorded right after he died, so I don't think I didn't have time to switch out the topic. It was a very big deal here in the US, and we were all different in different stages of our life for Suna. I don't even know if you were born when this trial happened, but
I'm not gonna tell you.
I'd like to get the international perspective, somebody younger than us and somebody that's international. Do you know anything about Orenthal James Simpson?
Okay, so yes, I've heard his name and I've read up on him, and I do know the Simpsons, the yellow ones too. So it was when I was young, I was like, which Simpson are they talking about? Until I realized it's not as nice as I thought it would be. Yeah, it is. It's a good idea to sometimes also have a female voice that's being heard. So I really appreciate that you made me a guest of your show here today. Being German, my accent used to be a little better. I used to live in New York City. First time I set foot on the US was when my sister was in Arizona. I told you, Brian, I almost died when I went to Arizona because I made the mistake in summer, I believe it was July, walk around at noon,
Yeah,
and
that's
kind
rough.
of almost died. It was way too hot. Was this one woman picking me up, telling me, "You come into my car. We have aircon here, and I drive you where you need to go." I was literally just like around the corner, but I couldn't find the house. All the houses looked exactly the same, and it took me 10 minutes in the heat to find it. And if she wouldn't have, seen that little black-haired girl, 18, 19 years old, walking around in the heat, taking care of me, seeing somebody was in kind of in a very difficult situation, I probably wouldn't be here talking to you. Yeah. Okay. I might be exaggerating a little, but that's what O.J. Simpson's story is also telling us.
All I heard is that if OJ picked you up, you wouldn't be here.
Getting in the wrong car, yeah.
And sometimes you need to take care of people who are in a weaker spot in life in that particular moment. Listen, have a look, try to assess whether you can do something for them. I think that's something that police kind of missed doing in this whole O.J. Simpson story. At least that's what I've heard. And I'm glad you gave me a voice here, and that my voice was kind of not hopefully in vain. So thank you for that.
No,
I
you're good.
think
Well, obviously you were not born. We've pulled that part out. 18 to 19 years old, July, it was
that
hot. Some nerd listening to the podcast is going to be like, "We know exactly how old she is." They're just going to put in these little points together and they'll be outed before you
did the
know it.
math.
They did the math.
Think the best joke to come out of OJ's death was somebody tweeted, OJ Simpson can now rest easy that the killer of his wife is now dead.
It's a bad one. It's a really bad one.
The search for the killer has ended now, Brian. The real killer.
I know, like, is the overall consensus that we all believe he did it now, or is
Oh,
it
everybody
still
knows he did it.
okay? I don't know. Like, it doesn't really come up in everyday conversation, and I'm curious if there's anyone. If you listen to the podcast, I'm not here to judge you, but if you think he's innocent, then I'd love to hear your thoughts as to why.
They even interviewed,
I
I
mean,
think, I can't remember if it was recent after the death or if it was within the last few years, but they actually interviewed jurors that acquitted him on, in the criminal trial, and they said, yeah, we got the verdict wrong. It was to put some backdrop to the story, the O.J. Simpson trial happened right after the Rodney King acquittal. So for those of you who are too young to remember this at the time, there were four LAPD officers filmed beating Rodney King after he led them on a high-speed chase. The officers went on trial for excessive force. They were all acquitted. The four cops were white. Rodney King is black. And that sparked the LA riots, one of the largest riots ever here in the U.S., probably of last century. There are plenty of riots this century that were probably bigger. And they th that some of the jurors said they were angry that those four white cops were acquitted, so that the fact that they acquitted O.J. Simpson was kind of like a middle finger and F you to the LAPD, the LA justice system. And some of the jurors actually admitted to doing that. So even some of the jurors said they got the verdict wrong. He should have been found guilty.
I forgot about that. That's crazy. Didn't Rodney King pull someone out of the truck and hit him with a brick?
No, that's I know who you're talking about. Reginald Denny is who you're thinking about. So Reginald Denny was the truck driver that was pulled out of his truck during the Rodney King riot. So this is after Rodney the
Oh,
acquittal. He was
okay.
pulled out of the truck. Four guys were like beating him to death. They charged the people with attempted murder for nearly beating this white truck driver to death. And the reason the person or people got off and were found not guilty was because the charge was attempted murder. And then they caught this guy on video, like throwing a brick at someone's head and then like smiling after it. It's like, you clearly wouldn't smile if you were trying to kill somebody. That's not attempted murder. And then they got acquitted for that. So Reginald Denny, look it up. It's an interesting case too.
So, Chris, you're not selling Suna on another U.S. visit at all with all this
Well,
conversation. She's like, this place sounds crazy.
I'll just say there's certain cities to avoid if you come back to the US, if you ever come to
Yeah,
visit.
I'm a fan of the US. And if you ever come to Germany or Europe in general, be my guest, let me know, and I'll show you around. There are a lot of nice places on Earth. Not every place is nice, yes, but most of them are.
And I think
Well,
it
thanks
also
for.
it was also reflected in the trial, because the criminal trial lasted 11 months. So 11 months worth of it, almost a year. The jurors spent a year of their life doing this, and they came back with a verdict in 4 hours. So 4 hours, nobody expected it to be that quick. They expected it to be days, weeks, 4 hours. They only took 4 hours to acquit this guy. All right. Well, we continue to get great comments about our dad joke of the week.
Dad joke of the week.
This week, our guest Suna is up.
What, I'm supposed to tell a dad joke? Oh my God. I had no clue. But I can tell you something that I promised you in the beginning I would tell, and it's the autocorrect of my name, right? So Suna Turhan is a very, very wonderful Turkish name, but sometimes the autocorrect makes me send emails with, hey, thank you for your email, and I have a nice weekend. Best, Sauna Turban. Like sauna, you know, when you go into the
Sauna
sauna. Exactly. That's my dad
turban.
joke here.
Yeah, you
That's
gotta go
all
watching.
I can contribute to make you laugh, and I'm glad it made you laugh. Thank you so much again for having
Yeah,
making
she's
me
gotta go. Yeah,
yeah, a
thank you,
guest of your
Sina.
show. They're kicking me out of this room here,
Oh,
unfortunately.
yeah, no
So
worries. Thanks for joining.
appreciate it highly.
Yeah.
And yeah,
Yeah,
I
you
look
get.
forward to staying in touch.
All right, to wrap things up, a 10 out of 10 vulnerability was exploited and eventually patched in Palo Alto firewalls. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. TikTok might be banned in the US soon. And the juice is loose. That's all I have for this week. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. You find us all on LinkedIn. Links will be in the description. Follow us on Instagram at PebCac Podcast. Thank you to all our listeners and subscribers who raised 5 stars in the iTunes Store and Spotify and left us a review. We appreciate you all spreading the word to help grow the show. The best way to find us is to search for the PebCac Podcast on your favorite podcast listening app. My co-host Brian Deitch and our guest Suna Taran. I'm Chris Lee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all next week. And as always, have a nice day.
Bye, Felicia.
Have a nice day.